Yo, yo, people, welcome back to the Root 411 show. Today we're joined by a special, special guest. He's known to the locals as the Romford Bull. I give it up to our main man, Johnny Fisher.
Wait, you know, one thing we wanted to ask you, yeah? You have that long-headed guy, the announcer.
Yeah.
He always has this like thing where he goes like, Johnny Fisher. Fisher. Yeah. Do you know why he does this?
I have no clue, but what you think, like Michael Buffer, you know, the old-fashioned, the OG one.
Yeah, let's get ready to rumble.
Let's get ready to rumble. That's his signature. Mm-hmm. And then David Diamante is obviously trying to make his signature move. So people now are probably saying, what the hell is he doing that for? Yeah. But you think 15, 20, 30 years time, he's still doing it. That'll be his trademark.
That's exactly. Yeah. We love it, right? Because every time...
We just wait for it almost.
Every time we watch anything, The Zone or anything like that, we wait for it. Then when we came to your fight, first of all, go on. To anyone listening who might not know who you are, I'm sure everyone does, just say who you are, what you do.
Big John's son.
It's getting like that now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But no, I'm a professional boxer, signed with Eddie Earn, Matchroom, 7-0.
Wee.
With 6 knockouts, and I'm just beginning, like, working my way up and see how far I can go.
Lovely, lovely. Amazing, thanks for coming on. But yeah, no, talking of that fight, we all went. So none of these guys obviously knew who you were before me.
I had an idea. I didn't know he was your mate.
You had an idea, but so we obviously went to school together, and these guys, when I started the podcast, and then I got them introduced them when you signed your professional contract, and then we all went to your fight. We tried to go to the ones before, but other stuff come up, stuff like this. But we all went to the last one. Mate, you've got a fucking following.
Yeah,
you have got a following, and mate, I can't lie, I'm repping the Romford Bull shirt.
Classic.
We all got one. We met Big John. But mate, your following is absolutely mental.
No, but that's good. It's good because it's a part of, it's not just me. The following's not just down to me. It's down to the people where we're from. And you know what, me and Ryan grew up, people get behind each other, you know? So that's good. It's a good community spirit and you just want to keep it growing. It ain't just where we live though as well. It's sort of like branching out now. It's from my old uni. It's up and down the country. So it's good. Sure. Long may it continue.
Honestly, because the whole talk about community and stuff, bro, like on the way to the fight, like anybody that had the similar shirt, you just had a connection straight away. Like, you're right, lads, how you doing? Liverpool Street, we caught the tube down to Wembley, and everybody was just like chiming in. And I'm like, that's good because London's got this perception where everyone's like just in their own lane, everybody's got somewhere to be, somewhere to go to, and it's like when you get behind that and you're just chatting to strangers you never met, but you got a common ground.
That's a good thing about sport in general, though. Like, you can unite people. I know we've got our football teams and people have rivalries, but with boxing you can sort of transcend that a little bit because it's not like the football team rivalries. People going to support a person, and they're people are respectful, you know, so long may that continue.
And you know what it is as well, it's like with boxing, you go to, for example, we went to go watch you, but we're watching every other fight in the undercard and we're sort of cheering for that person. Do you know what I mean? You know, when a Spanish guy, was it Martinez?
Kiko Martinez, yeah.
He fought and we were going mental because he ended up beating, he was the underdog of that fight. And it was mental. And then like you sort of cheer them, but you don't hate the other guy. You sort of cheer
Jordan,
everyone.
He's fighting Jordan Gill, and I know Jordan as well. And that's the thing, that the personalities come through in boxing a lot, very well as well. And it's good to support the other people coming through as well because there's some great fighters coming through. And if a little bit of my following goes and supports them as well, it's better for the whole sport of boxing as well.
100%. Obviously, you're a prospect yourself. Is there anyone else that we should be looking out for that you think are not getting as much attention as they should be?
There's one guy in my gym, Tommy Fletcher, who's a big cruiserweight guy, 6'7". Oof. Got huge knockout power. He flattened someone, knocked him out cold for 5 minutes in his last fight.
Jesus Christ.
He's been doing it to a few people in our gym as well, like knocking them out cold. Like
6'7" in a cruiser?
Yeah, and he's massive. He will fill out as well. A really nice lad, but he's got that mean streak in him, that danger streak. So he's one to look out for. He's signed to Frank Warren's. But there's loads of good guys coming through. Dennis McCann as well. When you got
Dennis McCann, I sparred him when I was an amateur. He probably won't remember. I sparred him one time.
Yeah,
it was at an England camp, and he's very, very quick, very flashy, very awkward.
Yeah,
but he's so humble.
He is.
When I got
nice
out of the
man.
Gym, one of the nicest kids I've ever met.
He is very nice bloke. And most boxers are like that because I know, as you will know, how hard the sport is. And there's no point being cocky or arrogant because one day you can walk in the gym and someone can find you out. And you know your own limits in boxing as well.
I've never had a fight in my life.
That's why you're so arrogant.
You know what it is? I've said to Alim, right, I wanted to go to boxing training, not necessarily to fight, but to be in a boxing environment, go to the gym.
Pick it up.
You know, I know I'll probably will slack because the boxing standards here, whereas
But it's good. It's good. You it teaches you an element of discipline, and I think it's good that it's being picked up. It's I think it's from Anthony Joshua and Tommy Fury going on Love Island. I know they're different things, but that's when it sort of had a little boom. You know, like the last 10 years, boxing's really taken off. It's become mainstream. They're doing it in gyms a lot more now. Mm-hmm. And the next step is to get it back into schools, because I think 100%. that'll be a good thing for all kids, as you said, all around London. It teaches discipline. It teaches respect, and it teaches humbleness and humility. So
that's
a good thing to get into schools.
Yeah. I think a lot more kids are getting into it now as well, because obviously, especially because like the influence of boxing scene that's happened now, everyone's favorite YouTuber and celebrity is just jumping on it.
Definitely.
What's your thoughts on the scene right now? Like, I feel like there's a lot of change happening.
Yeah, it is changing, but like everything changes, and everyone's got to adapt to the new circumstances. And there's things that I like about the new YouTube boxing. I think they're bringing new eyes to it. There's obviously things I don't like about it. That some people are going into these fights. You know, if you go to an amateur boxing club, you've got to train for 6 weeks before you probably spar. And they're letting guys go into that ring who've never fought or laced up a pair of gloves. They're trained for 3 weeks, probably twice a week. And it's dangerous. Yeah. It is dangerous.
No head guards.
And then they're not being properly trained. Mm-hmm. But there are benefits to it. It's bringing new people in. If it's policed properly, and it's still very new, so it's obviously developing and evolving. And there is a market there. And a lot of traditional boxers like myself, or people that come through the normal route of terms of like amateur and then turning pro, not a YouTuber, they can learn a lot from these guys, because they're very good at marketing themselves. They're very good at reaching out to an audience. And if regular or traditional boxing is going to survive, they've got to take a little bit of stuff from them guys.
That's actually a very good point. I think Eddie said that to you one time as well. Yeah. A lot of boxers could learn from you yourself.
Yeah.
How having a following online helps your boxing career as well.
Definitely.
Because a lot of people will probably say, oh, how's this guy getting so much attention?
Yeah.
And he's only had, let's say, four professional fights. But it's because you don't just do boxing, you also push yourself online, and that's why you've got a big following.
I'm also trying to give back to my supporters and stuff. We never, when we started off, I never thought it would grow this big or I'd have this many. I know I'd have good support, but I think, well, I've just tried to be honest every step of my career. I'm not a world beater. I'm not ready to fight world champions yet. I'm not ready to fight British champions yet. I've got a long way to go. But I think people buy into people who are real and speak honestly, and that's what I always try and do. And from there, it's sort of grown, not accidentally, but we didn't ever thought it would get to this stage, but it's worked well. So we just got to keep going the way we are.
Do you feel like being at this stage in your career now, obviously it's still early, but you've got such a massive following, you're selling out so many tickets at such an early stage. Eddie Hearn said it himself, he hasn't seen anyone do something like that probably since Anthony Joshua after the Olympics. Would you say that gives you a bit more pressure, because people like they want to see you in these big fights so soon?
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm sure you and your camp, your team know it's that going at a pace.
Yeah,
you've but got people want to see you at those big fights.
Definitely. Well, it's every professional boxer, no matter what, has that pressure on them, because they think you've got this platform, you've got to do well. Mm. But as you said, it's just that little bit more added. Where I'm selling 2,500 tickets, more eyes on me. But people got to realise there's a process with anything. Where is it? 20, 30 years ago, there'd be no social media. You'd have guys who get to 10 fights, 15 fights, and no one would know who they are. And then they start, when they get to championship level, that's when people start taking notice. Now, for every young boxer coming through now, there's going to be eyes on them from the very, very beginning. So that just makes it that little bit tougher in a way. It's good because there's more opportunities. You get more people coming to watch. It's better because you've got it's more entertainment. But you've got to be careful, and you've not got to get carried away with the hype of where you are. And I've learned that already in my career. I know what level I'm at, and I know where I've got to get to.
Yeah,
and no one else is going to tell me apart from myself and my team.
No, but I remember my first, because you were talking about how, you know, boxing took off the last 10 years. I think my first fight I went to was Joshua Takam.
Yeah.
In Cardiff.
That was
mad. I remember going to that, and I thought, wow, like the atmosphere. As soon as Sweet Caroline came on, you know what I mean? Sweet Caroline. Bash, bash, bash. It was mental, right? It was like, if I wasn't doing football, it would make me want to go do boxing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Seeing how crazy it is. But boxing to me scares me, because it's you versus one man in a ring.
Yeah.
Football, you've got 11 people, couple subs, got a manager telling you what to do. Boxing, so much limelight is on you. Scary.
And there's nowhere to hide or no one to blame.
Nowhere.
That's why you've got to make sure you make the correct sacrifices when you're bit leading up to the fight, like not going out here or not seeing that person or not going to that meeting or getting to bed at an early night. Because at the end of the day, you can have all this support network around you, but if you mess up, you're the one who's accountable for it. You can't go and say, oh, it's because of this or because of that. You messed up because you messed up. So as long as you give yourself 110% and don't cut any corners, if you lose or you don't have the performance you want, at least you knew I gave it 110%.
That's all you can do at the end of the day, innit?
Honestly, having a little look into you, Johnny, I found out you played a bit of rugby back in your day. And I feel like rugby and like boxing is like a very two different sports, right? Like myself, I stumbled across a new sport at university myself. I play American football for Kings. Nice. That's good. And so like I just want to ask like the difference between playing a team sport where you're relying on the man next to you and an individual sport like boxing where as much coaching and preparation and sparring may go into it, it's just you when it comes down to crunch time.
Yeah, you're right. It's very, very different. And I do, that's one thing I do miss. I miss playing in the team. Yeah. Even going back to when we played football, me and Ryan used to play in a school football team. Mm. We had a great team. We won the Havering Cup. We went 15 games unbeaten. But then rugby as well, it's a lot more physical and it's probably more comparable to boxing in that way. But you've got other men with you. You've got other blokes who you train with and you're training week in, week out. Mm-hmm. To play in for the same goal, to win. Literally, when you're training in a boxing gym, you've got people training with you, your stable mates, but they've got different careers, they've got different journeys, they'll be doing different things at different times. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. It is a lot lonelier and it's all on you. That's that pressure that you've got to deal with. The accountability is 100% on you, so there's no cutting corners at any point.
Exactly,
and that's the difference between a team sport and the individual sport that you've got to do. So, and that's something you've got to get your head around. The mental aspect of it is a lot tougher.
Fair enough.
It sounds like you're doing quite a lot. So you've been boxing, you've been rugby, you've been doing football. Do you think if you wasn't doing boxing, where would you be right now? It doesn't have to be a sport, but like anything else. Was there anything else that could have been?
Well, the plan was to I was going to do a law conversion course, done history at university at Exeter, playing rugby. And listen, I played a bit of rugby at Cooper's, school I went to after with Rian. I went to Cooper's after that. Mm. And it was good standard, but I went to Exeter and it was a completely different level.
University. Mm.
These boys who went to Harrow, they went to Eton, been to the top private schools. And I naturally got better because I was playing with better people. There was probably
Do you mind me asking, sir? It was Exeter and like, was it a Prem team, Div 1 team, Div 2?
They're the champions of the Super Rugby, so they're the top of the top.
Okay, they're the top Premier team, the Kings best. Themselves, we just recently got promoted to Division 1, so now we're like stepping up.
That's but it.
When you go to those higher levels, like Premiership, but those boys are like serious business, aren't
they? Like it's called Buck Super Rugby, so they're like the top boys. You play against Loughborough, you play against Edinburgh, Durham, right? The other top ones. So it's the... I didn't really realise at the time, but that was like the best of the best you could be. So for me to even be on the coattails of them boys, I was really pleased with myself. But if I carried on playing rugby, I probably could have ended up playing National One, maybe Championship if I dedicated as I did for the boxing to rugby. But I didn't have the passion for it like the way I did when I was boxing. And I was going to do a law conversion course and become a barrister, and I would have enjoyed that. But
fair enough.
This is what I want to do, and this is... I know I've done other things, but I feel like this is the best place I could possibly be.
What switched? Because I know you done boxing very minimal during school. Because I remember you had a fight, I think, at school.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a ring in the school. And you sort of stopped it.
Yeah.
Played football.
Yeah.
Done rugby.
I'm trying to remember. I've boxed when I was year seven. I had a couple of fights. And then year nine, year 10, I was boxing a bit. And then year 11 was sort of stopped. Year 10, 11.
Mm, probably because of studies.
Yeah, and I didn't box properly again until I went to university. So I stopped from like the age of 14, 15. I was sort of focusing on a bit of football. Then it went into rugby when I went to Cooper's and then to Exeter University. And then I picked the boxing back up. But that's probably the best thing I could have done because, one, I'm a heavyweight and you've got a much longer career and you've got more time to develop. When you're fighting when you're 14, 15 years old, it's very different when you're 19, 20, you become a man. Mm. And your physicality changes a lot.
Mate, you was a man since you were 16. Yeah. I'm telling you,
fat old boy.
Even when he was in year seven, tall, I remember you played centre-back.
Yeah.
I said it on an Instagram comment, mate, his through balls, it would be clearances, but it would turn into through balls to me up front. And I would score.
Just hoofs
it. What did you call it? Clearance through ball.
Clearance through ball. Because, mate, the amount of times, he would like clear the ball, it would come to me, I'll score. He gets the assist. So he's probably racked up double digits assist in
the
season.
I've got the best assists of Marshall's Park ever, probably.
Damn.
And, that's big, bro.
And I remember one game you split your head open.
Yeah.
Oh.
I remember that. How did that happen again? It was
someone's elbow came down.
Something like that. And I remember we went mental.
The whole team, they was getting a bit lippy, weren't they?
I think it was like a national game.
Oh, so it wasn't even like in school. It was like an actual competitive game against another school.
Another school.
Oh, damn.
Not like school football game. But
damn.
I think they was
getting really lippy, and I think that just calmed it down a bit. When like I got cut on my head, it was just like, it just all, that was like the end of it. And it,
Yeah, I think did the game get stopped?
It got stopped for a little bit, but I think it just needed that break because it was getting a bit
I remember getting back to the coach and still seeing you on the side. Yeah, I know. Still like holding it.
And I had a Chinese waiting for me that night. I had to go to Harlow Hospital for 3 hours and I was waiting for a Chinese around Harry's house.
Just to get stitched
up. It was an away game, I remember.
I was like, can you hurry up, please, and get the stitches in? I want to get to my sweet sour chicken Hong Kong style.
I remember as well, you was a Liverpool fan. You had, if I'm not mistaken, right, you had huge Liverpool shin pads, right?
Yes. the white ones.
Grey.
With the big ankle.
It was one of those ones where it went like that.
Yeah, you know? You've got the big ankle sock as well.
So you were like the opposite of Grealish, isn't it? Like where he's got the short socks and the tiny
I said this on another talk we've done. I was a Brexit centre half.
Oh, mate, Brexit.
You know, head the ball, clear the ball, no passing. Just simple.
Mate, it was hoof.
I'm a hoofer.
If in doubt, kick it out. Mate, Rose, but it was good
curiosity.
Proper. It was, mate, it was good times. It was good fun.
It's great playing in a team, you know, like you build up a camaraderie. You do build a bond, like you become really good mates.
100%. It's like a brotherhood, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Do you still play at all?
What, football?
Yeah. Casually at all.
I see you do charity matches a lot.
Yeah, I do a few charity matches, but I'm no, you know, like you lose your positional sense. I'm not that I was any good back in the day, but I could hold my position all right. Mm. And I was quite limited, but now I've just lost it completely. Just got to keep it simple. I always panic when I get the ball passed.
Yeah.
I do remember.
I'm not a ball player.
But I remember because like year seven, you was probably what, you was the tallest one in the team. Tallest one. You was probably about 5'7".
I weighed myself when I was 11 years old. I was about 75 kilos. So I was a big old chunky like ball.
Heavier than
I was
you,
a bit
right?
chunky, bit chubby. But yeah, you grow into your body as you get older.
And then you sort of you've become a heavyweight probably once you hit about year 11.
Yeah, probably.
So
the amount of food I was eating.
I was gonna say right a question I was thinking. So if you weren't a heavyweight.
Yeah,
and you could be any weight class you want. You can choose in the boxing scene, right? You could be any weight class. What would you be, and why?
I would say middle or super middleweight. I think that's the next best one.
Who are the world champions in that? I'm not a boxing expert.
It's like Canelo, sort of guys, yeah. Billy Joe Saunders. But I'm thinking back to the old, like the middleweights back in the day. I'm sure it was like Marvin Hagler,
Hearns,
Roberto Duran. I hope I ain't got that wrong.
Leonard, Hearns, Hagler,
and who's the last one?
Roberto Duran,
Hands of Stone, Roberto Duran. That was they're the classic middleweight era, aren't they? And then you've also got like Chris Eubank, Nigel Benn. They were great, great middles and super middles.
That was, what's that, the '80s?
But Eubank,
roughly.
Eubank Senior and Nigel Benn. Like they're legends, like British.
That rivalry right there was probably the best British rivalry that I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
They're the trilogy, right?
Yeah.
No, it was they actually no.
It was two, wasn't it?
Chris Eubank never actually gave him the third fight. I think Ben's always wanted the third fight. So what
Eubank's,
I remember,
Eubank
first one
won the first one.
Then the second one was a draw, which caused a lot of controversy because a lot of people thought it could have gone either way. It could have been Ben. It could have been Eubank. Mm. And so then they never got the third fight. I think to this day, Ben wants that third fight.
We never know how it goes. Like Mike Tyson's fighting.
Ricky Hatton.
Holyfield had a couple as well when he was 55.
Ricky Roy Hatton. Jones comes back every now and again. Ricky Hatton fought recently. Mm. What about yourself, though? Like, do you see yourself in like any sort of rivalries at the moment? Because the reason why I bring it up, whenever you and your dad have like an Instagram or Twitter post.
Yeah.
Go through the comments.
There's
a certain someone almost in every post just giving it large.
Yeah, of course. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Everyone, you're always going to get people. I'll be worried if no one was giving it large. You know, I'm very lucky. I've got 95% of the supporters because I'm honest. They're friendly and they try and support. But you get people who want to dig you out all the time.
Mm.
But talking about rivalry, probably Christopher Lovejoy is the one.
Yes,
the
one we're
thinking. Exactly. I think we're all thinking of the same.
For where I am in my career as well, he's probably that next step up that I need to take. And he can punch. He's had 20 fights and 20 knockouts.
Damn.
So he can. He's a big old lump. It's going to be an hard. It'll be an hard, tough test. But he keeps giving it large. He's got a bit of profile, and he gives it, it. My fans interact with him all the time. So
always, man.
How'd that start?
I don't know.
When you was like 1-0, he started commenting.
He started calling me out then. But he called out Joe Joyce on the same day. That was a thing. I was like, mate, you're
anyone who gives him a bit of attention, basically. Yeah. I guess your fan base were like, who's this?
He saw a little Saturn in you where he was like, yo,
I can take that.
Yeah, probably. That little itch that he might have had, didn't
it? Or he's smart and he thought, I can see a following from this guy.
Maybe.
If I start early, I can, he will always remember me as that guy. Maybe the fight might come in the future when Johnny reaches the levels.
But when I'm out, a lot of people always ask, when you fight in Lovejoy, when you fight in that American geezer. That will do good numbers. You know, if we get that fight in the summer this year, in the O2 or something like that, I think that will do a good amount of tickets. So,
how do you think that fight turns out if it does?
I think I would stop him within 4 or 5 rounds.
I watched the fight of him.
He's slow, but he can punch. So you've got to be careful. Mm. You can't get complacent.
Mm. Can't underestimate.
Every heavyweight's dangerous, though, isn't it?
Everyone,
that's what you sign up for.
Anyone cruiserweight or above, anyone over 14, 15 stone who's a fighter can punch because they've got the weight behind it. So you can't ever get complacent.
Mm. And there was, going back to the other topic before, there was one person who sort of called you out. he said, and you'll probably know as soon as I quote this, anyone under 10-0 in your roster, I will take him.
He said it to Eddie Hearn.
Eddie Hearn.
Big bad Jake Paul.
I remember you posted like that, my money don't jiggle post. Like, I know that fight.
That suit was far too small for me as well. I got me a suit and it was the smallest suit in the world. Like, I'm too late now, I've got it on. And I couldn't.
I don't think that fight probably would happen, obviously, because of the weight.
He wants to be fighting people with huge, huge profiles. Like, yeah. The KSIs, the Andrew Tates, those sort of guys. So.
Yeah.
And I know his trainer. I know Jake Paul's trainer, BJ Flores. When I went the first time with Joe Joyce to Las Vegas, he's a really good trainer, BJ Flores. And he's done a really good job with Jake Paul because he's improved vastly. And I see him as the best one out of all the influencer guys. He's a league apart from the other guys. And I spoke to BJ Flores about it when people started saying, oh, Johnny, you're going to fight Jake Paul. You know, like my supporters only. And he said, the weight advantage is just going to be too much because he's like heavy cruiserweight.
He's at 180 or something?
Yeah. Not and sure. I'll have about 40 pounds, 50 pounds on him.
At
the minute, I'm about 240.
Yeah. So what are you normally on, like, fight day?
About that, like 235, 240. The last fight, the scales were a bit wrong. I didn't know what happened there. There's all wobbling the bat. It said I weighed 16 stone 6. I haven't weighed 16 stone 6.
Does that happen a lot in like the pro game?
Sometimes the scales are very, don't want to say too much, but the scales can be.
Yeah, I was about to say, do you want to like give us an insight of what happens? But
every scales is different as well. I might weigh myself, my scales at my gym and I'll weigh 17 stone 5 and then I'll go to a different scales.
Go home,
and I'll be 17 stone 1 or I'll be 17 stone 8. Like, there can be like a 3 or 4 pound difference.
That's actually really surprising because you'd think by now in this day and age they'll get like a standardized scale. Yeah. Like, this scale's got to be in every arena, every weigh-in. It's got to be this one.
It'll be completely accurate, but I suppose it's one of them things. Boxing's always been a bit like that, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Things can change a lot.
I mean, there are. Boxing's a controversial sport.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's controversy everywhere. We won't dive into too much because you're a pro. But at the end of the day, I have to remember, you're a pro boxer. You can't always talk about.
And we don't want to go down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theory.
Yeah, there's so many to choose from.
We save that for ourselves. We save that for ourselves. We've had our talks about. But we won't bring up with you because obviously we don't want to.
We've only got half an hour. That's the problem as well.
I know you because obviously you're a history guy. You're a very smart guy. Probably, what, A stars, A's? In school?
Yeah, I've got 2 A stars on the A level and then 5 A stars and 5 A's at GCSE.
Oh, wow.
Damn, lad.
So I was a bit of a nerd.
You literally could have done anything you wanted to. Like, I want to get punched in the face for anything.
Yeah. I'm not that clever then, am I?
No, but going back to school days, like, I remember, I think we were in the same geography class.
Geography, yeah.
PE.
Was there any like French or Spanish? I think.
I done French.
Yeah, I thought
I
was in French.
I was in your French. You're very smart. And I hope boxing doesn't destroy your knowledge.
That's what I'm worried. I've got to keep it up
here. Give us your best French.
My French ain't very good.
You still remember it or not?
Je voudrais manger le coq monsieur.
Oh, it's definitely.
Dans les promenades.
Wait, let me guess. Was that in your GCSE?
That was in my GCSE. Right,
and you're speaking and reading.
It's ingrained in my memory.
He's a footballer, isn't he?
Oh.
No, I'm joking.
Because if there was one thing from school, what do you miss the most? Because I've seen you go back to school a lot and you've done a lot of talks, which is good.
I just miss the camaraderie you have. I miss the sport inside of it. You know, like, not even like the PE lessons with A-Let when we go and enjoy it and it'd be like, it's raining outside, oh, we're going to go and play a bit of cone ball today. Do you remember?
Yeah. It'll be random. We might play dodgeball because it's raining.
Yeah. Mm. And then like going, when you leave school early with your mates at like 2 o'clock, you've got to go and play a school football match and you're like, oh yeah, we're the boys today, we're leaving.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing better, and everyone who did play football back in school misses is school football.
School football's amazing. Because you're playing just because No one's getting anything out of it. You're playing it because you want to do it and you love it.
Yeah.
And you're going with your mates and you build up. You go to all different schools over London. You try and get to the best as far as you can in the cup. Remember we were on a massive cup run, didn't we?
I think it was the. Was it the national?
We went to Blackheath in South London. Oh. And then that guy, that lino, kept robbing us every single time.
What year was it? Was it year 8?
Robbing us on the line.
Just kept giving bad decisions.
Bad decisions.
We had a lot. Because did you also play district?
Yeah, we played district, didn't we?
District, our team was dirty, really mate. Good. A lot of the players played pro now.
We had Max, a great team, didn't we?
Yeah, Max plays pro.
Max, Jake Brocklebank was good. Yeah. Ryan Burt Allen. Emmanuel, do you remember Emmanuel?
Yeah, I still talk to him.
Emmanuel. Yeah.
What's it? Cameron John. He plays in League John. Two now.
Sean O'Brien.
Oh, Sean O'Brien. Wow. Sorry, great guys. You probably done
it. Is that memory lane now? Yeah. Memory lane.
Honestly, mate.
Are you sure you guys didn't go to like a sports school or something like that?
You know what school it was? Athletes. It was a performing arts school.
It was drama. Way. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Do you see yourself as a bit of an actor then?
No, not at all. Not at all. I leave the acting to other people in my family. William's the actor, isn't he? Albatross.
He does always I think it's like the Football Factory soundtrack. And
yeah, that's
that.
Henry. Henry's the guy who does the voiceovers. He's like the creative guy.
The designer. He thinks of the plan. And the
it's almost like you've got a family. Like you've got the perfect people.
He's like your own PR guy.
It's not perfect, trust me.
Not every family's perfect. But look, you've got, you know, Will. He was behind the whole social media push of your dad, Big John.
Yeah.
You've got obviously Henry that does the voiceovers,
the editing and all that.
Editing, then you've got you that sort of. If it wasn't for you,
you almost are the star of the show. Aren't you? Because
once you become a pro boxer and you had the limelight, then they had the ability to shine.
And now Big John's come through and he's stolen it all.
Stolen all.
Talking of Big John.
That's actually a great point to go into. I just wanted to ask you about your old man. Like, how's he found the following? I'm assuming he's like old school. Like, so wasn't on socials before that.
Well, the thing is, when he first started, it was just my brother Henry who started filming him on TikTok. My dad didn't know he was on TikTok, and people were coming up to him. Are you Big John? Are you? Come with a photo, and he thought it was because of the boxing and stuff. And then he said, "No, we want it for you." And now he's all of a sudden out of nowhere.
Oh, so you're the one taking the pictures now?
Yeah, I'll take pictures all the time.
They give you the camera.
Like, who's this guy? Move out. You might take a picture.
Honestly, it's most of the time now, it would be people asking me to take a photo of Big John. But now he's got like nationwide tour again this year.
Yeah, I saw that.
Going all over the universities, feeding people prawn crackers.
So oh,
yeah, that's insane. Yeah.
That reminds me of a few student nights out. Like, imagine just seeing Big John come down in the club with a prawn cracker.
He goes to student nights out. But it's mad because, you know, your dad, all of our like family, they come from a generation where social media didn't exist.
Yeah.
So he's probably thinking when it first happened and he saw the following, he was probably confused at all.
Yeah.
And obviously, I remember his Instagram page used to just be full of him screenshotting and reposting stuff.
Reposting my stories from my workouts or whatever.
Literally. And now I think he's on like over 150,000.
Yeah, he's on nearly 160,000 followers.
Ooh.
And it's going up and up and up. By the time this is released, he's probably on 200.
Yeah, yeah.
It was this one stage which was going up like 5,000 a day.
Wow.
Like it was going up. So our TikTok was the same though. We got banned on TikTok. We're hopefully getting it back because we don't know why we got
conspiracy.
Banned.
Conspiracy.
I think if so many people report you, it flags up and the algorithm just bans
and
you.
And then the.
But we was gaining like 10,000 followers a day and it was on 400,000. It was 410, 420. It obviously dropped down now because it's banned. But it was growing massively. But that's because of Big John and eating his Chinese and saying dodge.
He's on a diet now, right?
Yeah, he's been on it for this is the first week.
Okay.
Every Friday or Saturday he'll have his treat. So
I saw a video on your story.
Healthy loads. I bored rice and.
No, that's smart. It's smart.
No, it is as well because if you cut off everything that you like, honestly, the diet doesn't last, does it?
No, it's not sustainable. You've got to still enjoy your food and. He's doing it the right way, but he's just got to maintain it. He's not got to be too strict, as you say.
Exactly.
Too extreme. It will only last a month, and then it's not enough, is it?
So when he goes on tour, is he like going to the tour, stay in a hotel or something, come back that night back home, or is he going around?
Depends where he's staying. Sometimes if he's got like three in 1 week, he will have to stay in somewhere and then go down to it. I think once he went from Liverpool to Swansea and then to somewhere else in like Oxford or something like that. But if they're close, if they're like Oxford or... just like in London somewhere, we'll just come back home. But sometimes it's back to back. Like he won't be at home for like 2 weeks doing his tours. Yeah, living it up.
The wife must be questioning. Yeah. Sometimes. Where have you been,
Mr. John? Especially when he goes out to that Chef Dave.
Oh my god!
Having a few drinky poos.
Yeah. What a guy! I mean, the most iconic one. Well, not really most iconic one. I mean, the whole reason he became popular was because of the Bosh.
Yeah.
Mm. Now that came from Tom.
Tom yeah, Skinner, right?
Tom Skinner, yeah.
Tom Skinner.
But Bosh has been a word, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard it before, yeah. Like, growing up.
And then Tom said it on Apprentice. And then my dad started saying it to support Tom. And then he just started saying it the way he doesn't say Bosh, he goes Bash. Like that.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, everyone started saying Bash like that. So okay. I associated with him as well. But Tom's our good friend, and he's doing good things. He's been having his breakfast in.
Oh,
Beano's
mate, he's even him himself on Twitter.
Yeah,
it's like, because obviously Twitter's a hard place to get a big following compared to the other apps. I tune in every morning.
Yeah.
So his breakfast, mate. One morning he's got a curry. Next minute he's like, oh, I'm only going for cereal today. Yeah. And it, mate, he's doing big things, man.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. He's always been a grafter, Tom, as well, and he'll always be a hard worker. And he's a good friend of ours. So.
Nice fella.
Fellow Bosch soldier.
What's your diet like when you're in camp? So when you're preparing for a fight?
It's strict when I'm in camp. You know, I'm eating Chinese and stuff, but that's when I'm like, if I haven't got a fight date, I'll eat what I want, because you've got to come off of that strict regime. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's no contrast. Now I'm in camp, I'm going to eat, everything's clean. I eat a lot of food because I've got to fuel my training, but it's clean. And then Saturday night, I have one night off, as you said. Even for me, you've got to be able to sustain it. Mm-hmm. So you have one night that you look forward to on Saturday night, and you can eat what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a lot of carbohydrates. They take up most of it because of all the
energy,
constant training that mm-hmm. you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's just making sure you eat enough all the time, because I'm not gaining or losing weight or trying to train to gain or lose. It's just literally fuel for what I've got coming the next day or the day after that. So you miss a meal, it does make a big difference down the line, because you're constantly training 5 or 6 times a week. You've got to keep yourself fueled.
I don't know how you keep on it, honestly.
It's hard. Sometimes you're eating, like, I remember on my debut, like, just before I went into the Fight Week hotel, I was eating, like, spaghetti bolognese at 12:30 at midnight, like, big poles. I wasn't hungry, but I know I had a big sparring session the next day or a big run, and that is all fuel for the next day. That's what, you don't see food as... That's why when I'm off of camp, I see food as, like, pleasure, because I can eat it because I'm enjoying it. When I'm eating it in camp, I'm eating food literally as a chore.
For the sake of eating, basically.
Yeah. Ends to a mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You got a target.
Shit. But can you give any hints or any clues of when your next fight date's coming up? It'll probably be released by the time your news comes out.
Early March, and it's going to be an away day. I can't say any more than that.
No, that's fine.
It's going to be an away day to a very good city, so... I think the Ball Army is going
to
be excited for this one.
Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully we can early make it March. There as well.
Early March. We should hopefully. I don't think anyone's away.
Nah.
No, we're there.
No holiday plans
yet. Depends where the location is.
Away day, so in the UK. Away day in the UK.
Okay.
All right.
It's going to be a good... it's just a good... Because when you go to an away day like Sheffield, no one really knows what it's going to be like or what the venue is going to be like. And people just go with it. And I think sometimes they're the best nights out. When you don't know what's going to happen, nothing's
the spontaneity.
Planned.
Everyone's staying in that area as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. So everyone just goes with it, and they're the best nights, aren't they, when you don't plan anything.
Mm.
Do you ever still get nervous, like, coming up to a fight?
Yeah, definitely. My debut, I was really nervous because a lot of pressure had been put on me. I had Tyson Fury giving me a shout-out message and stuff like that.
That's
and
the thing, yeah. You're
you don't know how, in like, you question, not question yourself, but you're like, am I good? Like, you do a little bit, like, am I good enough? Am I going to be able to do it on the stage? What am I going to act like in this new environment?
Mm.
And then even when I fought at Ali Pally, and I knew my hand wasn't right, but I didn't know it was broken, but I knew it wasn't right. And then I had the biggest crowd I've had yet, and little things just add up, and little things were going a little bit wrong. That made me nervous as well. But I think the last 2-3 fights, I've sort of turned a corner, and I'm used to the crowd now. It doesn't give me that. Mm. When I fought at the O2, my legs were shaking. Like I was like, took me around to get my legs.
Was that the
normal.
Dylan White one? When he had to
pull out of a shoulder injury. So, yeah, like you're just getting used to it all the time. And then when I fought in Sheffield, it was a bit better. And then I fought at Wembley, it was a bit better. So that's why you've got to go through these experience levels, because when you get to world title level or British title level and European, you've got to go through these stepping stones and gone through these experiences to be able to cope with that next bigger occasion.
Mm. No, that's a good point, because. Yeah. I remember your first fight. So as soon as you finished, I remember when the guy couldn't get back up, you sort of had that sense of relief. I remember you was always like this. I just remember you.
Right, I've done it.
I was probably more nervous than you.
Yeah.
Watching it.
Yeah.
There. So I've watched everyone. I was six, and then obviously we watched the first one in person. That was even more nerve wracking.
Because you're there, yeah.
But it was different because we had fans around us, mate. Just because you can't experience it because you're in the changing room.
Yeah.
I'll tell you now. We're sitting there, suddenly a guy in front of me just turns around. Who wants a fucking burger? How many times?
Yeah.
Every
even to be fair, even on the way there, but in a way, like, especially having the. I think it's smart getting everyone to wear the same t-shirts and everything as well, because like on the way there, we don't know anyone, but I feel like everyone was one big family.
Exactly.
We didn't know no one, but we were getting along with all these strangers.
Was at the station, like, a guy was like, oh, I want a burger, burger.
You just automatically just feel welcome.
I don't know who you are. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. You're trying to create a unity that you're all on the same page. We might all come from different backgrounds or do different things and different jobs, but it don't matter. Mm. We're there for sport at the end of the day, and you're going to support someone, and that's what it's all about. That's why sport is good. It brings people together.
Mm. For sure.
Now, but what? So you're 7-0 now. You've had four in 21.
Yeah.
You had 3 in 22, but obviously you had
the hand
injury. You broke it?
And it was actually broken in that 0-2
during
fight.
During two fights, wasn't
it? Yeah. The 0-2 fight. They said it's been broken since then. And, you know, it's one of them injuries where, oh, I think it'll be all right. It'll be like an overuse injury.
Just work through it.
Like. He said, basically, it's like you've got, like, arthritis in your, like, you've just got shin splints in your hand, basically. Oh, where you're just, like, you're cracking down your bone all the time, and it's getting gradually worse and worse. And where you think, oh, it'll be all right next week, you're actually just making it worse where you're not letting it rest.
Exactly, so
after February, when I had that fight, I had to rest it completely for 3 months, and that was quite annoying because I couldn't do no weights, nothing, just running and even a little bit of swimming I was allowed, but even that wasn't probably allowed.
Wow.
And it's just annoying. But with injuries, you've just got to get on and do it straight away. If you just put it off and put it off, it's just going to prolong it.
By the time you do end up doing it, because you probably could have been recovered.
Yeah, like you could have, like, when you're messing about, you could have made 4 weeks recovery already. Do you know what I mean? So you're better off just doing it straight away. And it's never always as bad as what the doctors say. When they tell you 3 months, it's probably about 2.5 months for me to be back to where I needed to be. So it's just a relief once it came back, because there was a point where I thought it's just going to be fixed and I'm going to need an operation, and that takes another 6 months. And do you know what
six
I mean?
Months in boxing.
It just sets you back
for
a bit.
For a young prospect, 6 months
it kills
is
all the
energy,
the momentum that you've sort of built. You know, so it's important to keep building momentum, especially early on in your career.
Mm. I want to get into your mind a little bit, like when you're in a fight. So especially the fact that you said you knew your hand was a bit hurt, but you didn't know where it was. When you've got your opponent in front of you, what are you thinking? Like, what's going through your, what's the thought process in picking,
well, in that particular,
picking your opponent apart?
Yeah, in that particular, in that fight, I felt it on the pads, and I thought, because I hadn't punched for about a week before that fight, because I'm obviously resting it. I don't need to punch or do any pads because I'm resting and I'm trying to get my strength back. And I just started hitting pads for the first time in the changing room, and I thought, oh, this is all right. And then 2 or 3 right hands in, I just thought, crunch, crunch, crunch. But what can I say to my trainers or my team? I'm literally about to walk out in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And to all my support, I can't say, oh, my hand's not feeling too good, can I? I've just got to go on out there and do it. And I thought the adrenaline will take over. You've got your guy in front of you. You've got to do your job. In the first round, I felt all right. And then it just takes one angle to throw it slightly wrong, and it set it all off. So, but all you've got to do in that, you've got to adapt. I got cut in the first 30 seconds as well.
Was that the
Ali Pali one?
Was that the one against the Spanish
champion?
Where he went the full out?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but looking back on that fight, that's probably the best fight I've had from experience, from an experience perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed that I can go 6 rounds, and I've got the lungs, and I'll probably fight for another 2 or 3 rounds. And that was early on in my career. But every time you go in there, I do switch. You switch into your killer instincts.
Killer instinct.
And I want to. I think that's why people are excited to come and watch, because, listen, I've got a long way to go. I'm not a world level fighter, but I'll bring an exciting fight. I'm going in there to try and take the other guy out.
That's heavyweight. That's
what
boxing.
People want to watch. People want to watch people who go in there to try and dismantle the other guy.
Yeah.
I might not be the prettiest guy to watch all the time, but I will give you an entertaining fight.
No, believe me, it's pretty.
Honestly, yeah.
There's some heavyweights that I watch and I'm like, really?
Yeah, it's true. Some like who don't train properly, don't eat right, and it shows in the ring. So as long as you invest and you do the right things in the build up, you can't moan at what the last result is, because you've done everything you can.
Yeah. You've spoken about like coming over adversity. Do you have like anything you want to say to like even like other sports players, like about understanding their bodies and like sort of like knowing when it's right for you to actually take that time to recover and that? Because I've got like, there's a few players on our team that of course get injured as the season goes on. It's a long season, and sometimes they do come back a bit early, and then that what does that do, kicks back their recovery time another 6 weeks.
It's a maturity thing, I think, because we've all been there. We've all think, oh, it'll be all right, I'll be all right. But if you've got to be mature enough and you've got to be conscious of your own position. And there's always things when you're injured, just say you've injured, there's other things that you can improve on, and it gives you time to reflect on other things. I've done a lot of balance work and a lot of core work with my trainer, Sonny Cannon, my strength and conditioner.
Mm.
So you might be losing in one area and you're thinking, oh, you can't get disheartened by it. You've got to work on other things. And then before you know it, you're back in the swing of things, ready to go again. So, yeah, injuries are always tough. But you've got to think, why has this happened? It's happened for a reason. It's told me to work on other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have not got injured. And I could have fought my next fight. And I could have lost. That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's always the other aspect of it. What if I didn't get injured? Could that have... It's just happening to me for a reason. That's what I always think. I do believe in that. I believe in fate, and I think things happen for a reason.
Mm.
And it was good because it gave me a little bit of a break. I was getting a lot of hype around me at that point as well, probably more than I needed. I know it's good to have a lot of support, but people were expecting a bit too much of me. So it's good. It just gave me a time to reflect, relax, think about where I want my career to go. And then I came back in August and I got a good round two knockout, probably my cleanest knockout I've ever got. So
is that the double?
Yeah. It happens. It happens for a reason.
You mentioned before that Tyson Fury gave you a little shout out when you first started as well. Yeah. What's your relationship like with him?
Yeah, I don't talk to Tyson all the time, but he talks quite a lot to my dad, and I met his dad, Big John Fury, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really nice guys, really, really friendly. Offered me great advice as well. They said, you've got one career in boxing. The promoters have got 100 other fighters. The managers have got 10 other fighters. You've just got yourself. Mm-hmm. So you've got to make sure that you look after number one and don't try and be dilly-dally for other people. Yes, it's business. Yes, you have great relationships with other people. But in boxing, as soon as you're on the wayside or things ain't going right, people will spit you out and forget about you. So you've got to do what's best for you 100%. And look at him. He's at the top of the pile. So you've got to take that advice when it comes to you.
I mean, he probably could be fighting Usyk or Joe Joyce next.
Yeah, Joe Joyce.
I personally think it'll be Joe.
Yeah. They're both with Frank Warren as well, so that makes it easier. Mm. I think there's rumours of a fight maybe in March, April between Usyk and Fury for the Undisputed.
Mm-hmm. We'll do it.
And then Joyce could be later in the year. So that would be
interesting.
Joyce, are you mates with like Joyce and that as well?
Yeah, I'm good friends with Joe Joyce. He's managed by the same guys as me.
Mm-hmm.
Gone a lot of training camps with him. And really, really nice down-to-earth guy. A lot of people don't give him enough credit for how good he actually is.
I gained a lot of credit last fight.
Yeah.
The one people against Parker.
People are now starting to see what... Because when you look at Joe, he probably ain't the prettiest fighter. He's not the most fluent. But he's big, he's strong, he's fit, he can punch.
He can take a punch.
Unbelievable jaw.
Yeah.
When you're trying to build a heavyweight, they're probably the core principles that you need to be a good heavyweight. Mm-hmm. So for anyone, and I think Tyson knows it as well, it's going to give him a really, really hard night's work. And you're probably going to have to go 12 rounds against him. So...
Mm-hmm.
It is grueling. Even when I spar him for 6 rounds or 8 rounds, it's hard. It's hard, hard work. So to do that for 12 rounds with 10 ounce gloves on, you've got to be something special. So
what's crazy?
He'll push Usyk and Fury all the way.
Mm-hmm.
What's crazy is I didn't realize how hard 10 ounce gloves are.
Yeah.
Until I put 10 ounce gloves on once, and I just sort of done it to myself. It's like, oh my god!
No. It's basically your knuckle at that point.
Yeah, it's basically very light gloves. It's basically MMA
with bigger gloves, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. The bigger gloves give you a bit of cushion, and when you're fighting, they've got different materials inside. Mm-hmm. I think when you're in sparring gloves, there's more foam and things. I think
more padding. I think you've got
horsehair. When you fight in fight gloves, I think they're horsehair. I don't know if I'm getting this correct, but it's a different material and it's less dense, and it can transfer the power a lot easier. So that's why you see more knockouts, obviously
In actual fight compared to sparring.
Because obviously they're smaller gloves and they're not as heavy, and they're not as dense. So power transfer is a lot quicker.
Because Alim, you obviously, you're the most boxing man here at Husbury.
I had a couple amateur fights.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, what was you like? When you were doing amateurs, what's amateur, 16 or 14?
No, it depends on your weight class. Yeah. So I was fighting in 10s as well.
Yeah.
Would you be fighting in 12s, no?
But the difference with the amateur gloves is you can't. It's harder to close the fist, so you've got to really clench. With the with the professional gloves, like, they fit in and you're there. With an amateur glove, like, if you just relax your hands will probably stay around there, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What club did you box at?
Limehouse Boxing Academy.
Oh yeah, nice.
Fairly new, but at the time they were new. I think they're getting bigger now. They've got a few national champions.
That's good.
So they're growing and. You might see us back there again soon.
Because where was your fight? I remember you mentioned that fight in Liverpool, and it's So Johnny, have you ever had like an amateur fight or any fight where it's sort of you haven't really got any fans? Because every fight
sometimes
I remember you
obviously because you got traveling fans now.
I fought in Ali Pally when I was 13 years old, and it was like in the middle of the school day, and I took a little bit. It was like the afternoon, like 1 o'clock in the afternoon in the school day, and you just go up there with your dad and your trainer, and that's it.
And
like,
was all of that fight? Did they bring people? I mean, it was just
no, it's just me.
Oh, school, yeah.
But I've always had like three or four. Like, it was only when I started boxing at university. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of amateur fights there. Like, I brought 500 people from the uni and from home. So that was like the first, when it first started. But amateur boxing, you're doing it with like no one watching a lot of the time as well. So it's like, it's good, it's raw, and it's part of the education as a fighter to do a little bit of amateur boxing, I think.
Do you think, because I was thinking about this recently, I don't think amateur boxers get enough credit as they should, because when you hear the name amateur, you think they're probably not that good, they're not amateur. But there's semi-pros out there, which is like white collar. Yeah, and it's But there's a lot of amateurs that are better than a lot of pros, that are better than a lot of semi-pros as well.
100%. But it's just the way boxing is very humble. The fact that we call ourselves amateurs when we're amateurs, it makes people, as you said, people think, oh, he must be shit then. But that's not what it is.
It's a different category. It's a different.
Yeah, it's different. And you've got Olympians who are amateurs. People who go and win an Olympic gold medal, probably better than 50% of the professionals that go out there. And definitely better than all the white collar guys out there. But as you said, there's been a little rise in the white collar scene and the semi pro guys who probably go around, yeah, I'm a fighter, and they've got no head guards on, and they've got the smaller gloves, and it looks like a professional ring, but they wouldn't last 2 minutes with a lot of the amateur guys.
I mean, look at the Eastern Europeans, they do like 300, 400 amateur fights.
Well, Usyk's one of the examples.
Lomachenko.
They all done 300, 400 fights, suddenly now you're turning pro.
Yeah.
So they're fighting for a belt in like...
But I also think in other, especially for heavyweights, you can hang around amateur too long. And you can become stale, because it is a completely different to professional and amateur. That's one thing I know is I didn't have a long amateur career, but the style is completely different. And especially when you're going heavyweight, where it's got to slow down a lot more because you're bigger units. You've got to fight 12 rounds, 18 stone man. You've got to slow down. You've got to break people down. But it is completely different. So sometimes you can be like an amateur and you can be there when you're 25, 26, 27, 28. And if you're like a lightweight or middleweight, most of your career is sort of gone then. You've got to sort of be fast tracked. So if you are staying amateur for that amount of time, you want to be like an Olympian or won a world championship, because you want to be then thrown into that mix as a professional quite early. I think of Galal Yafai, he's one who's done it very well. He's won Olympic gold, and now he's...
Is that the recent one?
Yeah, he's knocking on world titles and things
like that. I think that was the one where I remember he won the Olympic, and then I think his first fight he fought for a belt.
Yeah, I think it was his 10 rounder or something.
I remember saying to him, I was like, how does that work? And then he told me
they're a family of fighters as well. Yeah. There's a few brothers. There's another one as well, yeah. I think they're all trying to fight on the same card soon, but it just never works
out. Imagine that. That'd be good. Three, four brothers, fight, every fight. That would be mental.
But yeah, I was just thinking, hopefully the amateur scene gets a bit more attention, because I think that's why there's a lot of controversy, especially with the influencer side of things. People are annoyed that, yo, I've been boxing my whole life, but I'm not getting near enough the same amount of money or near enough as the credit as I should compared to someone who's just started boxing.
I agree.
I think like British TV should do more to, like, these national, when I see national fights, if you watch an amateur fight, a national boxing fight, like England boxing or whoever it is, or the Euros, I think if that was on TV, it would encourage a lot more amateur boxers, people to get more, bit more experience.
I do agree that we need to put amateur boxing out there, as I said, not only for schools, but give people more credit. But at the end of the day as well, I'll look at it from the other perspective. Professional boxing, and boxing, it's an industry. It's a business. It's not just about like the amateur boxing. We're doing it because we love it. We're doing it because we're doing it for free, because we want to do it. But we've got to sort of learn, as I said, from these influencer guys. They're building up followings, and at the end of the day, money talks. And that's why people are tuning in to watch it, because they've got these followings. If KSI, just say he had 10 million followers, if 1% of his followings go and watch him fight, that's a lot of pay-per-view buy. A lot more than what a lot of people can pull in this country. So
it's true, you have to adapt.
Money talks, you have to adapt or you die.
That you brought up earlier that you'd be like actually pro to seeing boxing being brought back into schools, and I just wanted to ask you the question of, like, do you think that there's more, like, for example, that could be done in, like, even the university scene, because we're all still amateurs when we're playing a uni sport, but we have like an institution behind us, and we have like the Box League where we get to go up north and versus like north versus south, like we have all-star games in American football, and obviously boxing, you guys probably have a championship, right?
Yeah, boxing, we have a Bucks championship as well, but as you said, it's another one. It's not like rugby or cricket, or even like American football's growing massive in the universities now. Boxing's always been that one that's on the side of, like, in education. It's not really been
too dangerous.
That's what a lot of people, you joke about it, but that's what a lot of people's attitudes are like towards
there
boxing.
There is, bro, honestly.
It's too dangerous, so you're trying to punk. They don't have an understanding or for kids to sound, this is not going to sound politically correct, but people in urban environments who have got who are around knife crime or around trouble, you get put in a boxing gym, it could change your life because 100%. You're in a, you've got structure, you've got older people who are disciplining you, you've got people who are telling you right from wrong, and that can save a lot of kids' lives. But a lot of these academics and people of education, they can't see past what they know in their little bubble.
Exactly.
They don't see what the real world's like. Exactly, so yeah. And that's why when I went to university, I was being in a seminar, and the woman, I'd walk in, the lady, the teacher would say, oh, where have you been? You've been beating someone up on the street again. And I'm like, this is not what boxing's about. We've never been brought, and it not offended me because I'm not a wet wipe, do you know what I mean? But it's just like, you just don't have a clue like what boxing's all about, do you? Right. So honestly, there's a big divide in the country about combat sports.
And I honestly, to agree with you, I don't think it's just even like, for example, the seminar leaders and the teachers and the lecturers' fault. It's like the fact that a lot of these university amateur clubs are student run.
You have
a president who's a player who might be competing as well, but he's got presidential duties where he's got to run the club, make sure the budgeting's right, you're messaging the SU. 100%. So it's like, as a student, when you're playing it's for a student so led time. Team, it takes it's up
like
so
a whole
much
job. It's like a whole it job. Is. My good friend Nicholas Eaton, who ran it at Exeter, we sort of grew it. When we first went there, there was like 50 people in the amateur boxing club. We grew it to 650 people. It was the second biggest club in the uni, I think, behind rugby.
Yeah.
So it grew massively. But as you said, the admin that has to go into doing that,
of course.
He took over his life, and I was signing only the squad captain. Up, like
getting
their
insurance done, getting the SU to sign off on
anything,
it.
Any events you do, you've got to get health and safety checks and stuff like that. It's like running a little business. And
exactly.
Fair play to him, and he done a really good job. And I was lucky. All I had to do was turn up and do some of the sessions, and I could go home. But so I couldn't do that, all that stuff that he was doing. So it takes a lot of effort.
It is a lot, honestly. And I feel like if they did step in, and the uni, like for example, did provide a bit more support, or even like just more public support, there wouldn't be that disparity where you get a seminar leader saying what you've been beating someone up. No, they would actually know what the impact of the sport is.
It's just still that stigma around boxing, I think, that there still is. But it's getting better. People understanding this about respect, it's about humility. And at the end of the day, people have always, throughout history, have wanted to see people fight. So
true.
From gladiator time. So
literally,
you can't put it under whatever you do. If you don't embrace it, it'll just push it underground and it'll become more dangerous. So what we need to do is put it into schools and teach people the proper way to conduct yourself and to be disciplined.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What would you say to like the people that are trying to balance doing extracurricular activities like sports or performing arts, but while still trying to keep on top of their education as well?
I was like that guy at school. Rian knows, he was similar as well. You're trying to do all the sports you can. Yeah. And I think you've got to do it. And it benefits you if you do, because it makes you manage your time better.
Mm-hmm.
I actually find when I went to university and I had a lot more free time, I didn't manage my time nowhere near as well as when I was doing A-levels and GCSEs.
That's for sure.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah. Because I'm trying, when I was at GCSE and A-level, right, I've got to play football, I've got boxing, I've got to do this, but I've also got to do all my A-levels and my GCSEs. You've got no time, so it forces you to be more, to manage yourself better. So trust me, from my experience, it's better to be overloaded with work because it forces you to be more adaptable and work better than if you went to university and when you've got like, I've got nothing on today, I could just sit about and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Sack it off, literally, yeah.
It's what happens. You get lazy.
And you
fall into a lazy mindset.
You lived in campus as well.
Yeah, lived on campus and stuff.
So you're away from family.
You get into a lazy mindset. I just loved eating. I just used to sit in a room and eat. My first year, I just kept myself to myself. But the second year, when I started boxing again, that's when I actually started to do better and engage more with university life because I had to stick to a schedule a little bit better and it made me appreciate when I had free time a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what that teacher's going to say now. But I've got one last question myself. Everyone's going to be asked this if you're a boxer. Dream location of a fight.
Oh, this is a tough one. I'd love to. The one that always sticks to my mind, and it will probably be is Las Vegas. I'd love to take the Bull Army over to Las Vegas and fight over there.
It's like I think that would be like by the time we get to that stage.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Ricky Hatton fought Floyd Mayweather? Yeah. And it was almost as if they weren't in Vegas. It was a fight happening over here.
Of Mancunians walking
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
Weren't there more people went more over there than actually bought tickets or something?
It's brilliant. But
and the stadium sounded like that.
I just think that's where my journey started with the pro boxing when I first went and sparred Joe Joyce. And I didn't even think I was going to be a professional then. I was just doing it because I loved it. And then if it ended there, well, that's where the dream fight would... That, it makes sense that the dream fight would be in Las Vegas in the MGM Grand or something like that.
Just lastly as well, boxing aside, well, what's the end goal?
The end goal always has been you've got to make a living in life as well, and you've got to make people comfortable. And my mum and dad have done a lot for me, and it's to buy them a house or to make sure they never have to struggle again, look after my brothers. It's to look after your family. What do we all do things for? We do it because we want to help our family, want to make them proud. Mm-hmm. That's what life's all about. You do it for yourself to achieve it, but you're doing it because you want to make everyone around you have a better life as well. So the end goal is to make sure everyone's as happy and as healthy as they can be.
That's a humble answer.
It's true.
No, that's.
I'm sure we can all agree with that one.
Yeah, that's for sure. True. And that's some food for thought. And I actually want to thank you for coming down, Johnny, today.
Thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
No, honestly, it's been a pleasure. And I want to thank all you guys at home that's listening in to tuning into the 22nd episode of season 2 of the Route 411.
Thank you very much for listening. No, honestly, you're our first guest, and
thanks for having me on.
Not only just that, but it's also helped us now for future guests, and hopefully maybe more some more boxers and
give them a platform as well to give us a bit of insight.
Get Big John on next time.
Need a bigger chair.
Yeah, that's us wrapped up, guys. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.